Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in this episode. And it's a really good episode, obviously, coming up. The Nets unfortunately lose to Milwaukee Bucks for the second time in 3 days. And the Brooklyn Nets fan base, they're concerned. They're having their issues here following a difficult set of games against, obviously, a team we could see in the playoffs. But don't worry, Doug Norrie and myself are here to avail you of those fears. We do get into the game action, though, and discuss some of the rotations we saw tonight. Doug has a real issue with one particular lineup there in the second half. And ultimately, what are some of the things that we can take away from this game as we close out the end of the season here and build towards a playoff push? We cover the seeding implications as well, and the fact that the Brooklyn Nets could potentially maybe fall out of the two. And what would that mean for some matchup possibilities in and around the 7-10 seeds and those playing games that'll get underway in just about a week? But before we dive into all of it, it's the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. And right now, streaming live in Locker Room, I am Doug Norrie, owner and operator, DFSR.com. Got you covered, all the projections you'll ever need, every sport, not even going to go through them. Just figure every sport you can think of, we got a projection over there for it. And that is Adam Armbrecht, the voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, the host of the One Giant Podcast covering the New York Football Giants. Got the Big Apple on lock. Buddy, how are we doing? Coming after a Bucks loss, doesn't feel great. Are you freaking out?
Well, as I put this out, as the game was winding down, just to give context for where I was, this is the tweet. Just checking in. Down 5, buck 32 to go without Harden. Feeling fine. And that was regardless of what the result of this game was going to be. So yeah. I did not have the same sense that the fans seem to have coming out of this one. And I understand it because you just played them back-to-back games, the Bucks, that is, and maybe you just don't want to see the team lose to a team you may see in the playoffs. But I don't see it. I don't see a reason to be worried about the results of these last two games.
Yeah, okay, I can see why. Okay, I'm gonna come along with some Nets fans here, and I'm going to say I can see why, because this is one of the first, it's late season, this is a definitive matchup that they could see, especially the way the seeding is shaking out right now, because these three losses in a row, two specifically to the Bucks, lost in the tiebreaker, is going to make it really hard for them, not really hard, but it's going to make it hard for them to catch the Sixers with the tiebreakers. So it's likely that this is like a 2-3 matchup that they see in the second round. So I can understand why these two particular losses would cause fans to freak a little. I'm with you that I'm not freaking because they're regular season games. There's no Harden. Maybe they don't have Harden back. I guess I can't use that as a reason to not freak because Harden's not here. It's also a time where you're probably not throwing the kitchen sink in either one of these games. I think some of the lineups that they ran tonight sort of made sense that they weren't doing this, right? They're not going to throw every single look. I think they definitely wanted to win. So I think that part of it is, they weren't like tanking the game or anything, but it's also, look, these regular season games, we've seen this time and time again. The season's long. It's going to happen. You are going to have some times where you're going to lose a few games in a row, even as good as this team has been. And you really can't transcribe every single thing that happened here about over the last two games over what's going to happen over a seven-game series. So I think the part where this becomes the death knell for the season, like some people are treating it, is a complete and utter overreaction. And at the same time, would I have liked them to have pulled out one of these two games? Yeah, that'd make you probably feel a little bit better.
Yeah, for sure. And like I said, I think, you know, we went back to that 76ers game that effectively at the time, a lot of the commentary was, well, there goes your one seed. You've automatically lost that. Now the Nets fell out of the one seed again, but they got it back at one point. And I think it was following that game that I just adjusted myself mentally to say, I'm not going to worry about the seeding. I'm not going to worry about what these games look like, right? You and I keep talking about it. Health, that's all I want. Tell me that James Harden's going to be back. Tell me the extra week of rest at the end of the season when the play in games go off here to figure out the back end of the seeding. Like, as long as we're healthy once the playoff starts, I'll live with the rest of the results. Could there be a world where in a 7-game series and the Nets end up as the 3 seed looking up and have to go on the road for a 4th game out of 7? Could I look back on this and say, yeah, these are some instances, but I can't hold to that because it's not like the Nets, like you said, they wanted to win the game. They tried to win these games and they came up short because they're not 100% healthy. And I know we're going to get into some of the rotations and what went on in this particular matchup. There's players on the court that aren't going to be a part of this when it comes to a playoff series. So this is a full strength, healthy Bucks roster. And we lost 2 games over 3 days by a combined 9 points.
Yeah, and you know, and okay, so there's a lot to break down here, right? So I totally agree with everything you're saying. These are games where it's like, okay, we'd like to have them in the seeding in the end. You know, you mentioned, are we going to look back? Okay, yeah, you can look back at some of these games. We can look back to the Detroit game where they lost early in the season that kind of turned their season around and be like, well, we would have won that game. Well, you know, wish we would have won that one. So I don't think you can look at each individual game. You can't look at each individual game and say that was like the turning point of the season. And there's a very good chance when it's all said and done, there's no chance that we look back. Very good chance that there's no chance that we look back at these games against Milwaukee and remember them and remember them at all. That's just really how sports work, right? It's like the thing you think is happening in the moment that is the big groundswell, you know, seismic shift of the thing that portends whatever's going to happen for the season turns out that you a week later you rarely ever even remember it. So I want to remind fans of this because how many times have we seen it over the course of infinity games that people have been a fan over that they think the thing that just happened in the moment is the thing that is going to happen forever, and that's just not the case. Okay, so I'm mostly saying this to say, Nets fans, take a deep breath. It is okay. This is not the end of the season. This does not mean they're not playoff ready. This does not mean they're not a championship team. They lost 2 close games to a very good team that they could see again, and my guess is when the season ends, however it ends, this will not be the thing we look back as saying this was the critical moment where the season shifted.
And by the way, because in general on the podcast, it's usually that I'm, you know, more in the vein of pure fan in my reaction piece to it. I get it. I want to win these games. Because by the way, I would probably, and this maybe isn't justifiable, I would be hanging on the rim a little bit if the Nets beat the Bucks these last 2 games while they're coming out their full strength and we're trying to figure some things out. Like, I would be puffing my chest out and saying, great, yeah, we'll see you whenever you want in the playoffs because we did it against you at your best while we're still getting our legs back underneath us in a lot of ways. So, you know, maybe I have to take my lumps along with the fans as far as the loss goes and the frustration there. But again, to your point, the reaction piece of it, I just think, you know, take away the positives that there are in this game, which there still are. These last 2, Kevin Durant still putting up big performances. I have some thoughts around what went on over the course, specifically this game, really, even different from the first one, that I do wonder about when it comes to long playoff series and potentially a long run for the Brooklyn Nets, however these seedings shake out. But those are going to be concerns around, you know, health, around fatigue, that kind of stuff. I think those are going to be questions no matter what for this team between, you know, Kyrie Irving doing a lot of the heavy lifting down the stretch here. Maybe we mentioned him with the fasting of Ramadan. You've got Kevin Durant, not really a ton of games under his belt over the last 2 years. And then the Harden piece when he gets back and him getting ramped back up into, quote, basketball shape for the playoffs as well. So some of these things are going to loom no matter what. And again, if it had been losses to the Bucks, it could be a loss to the Mavericks coming up. I refuse to put too much stock into these games because if I do, then I do completely understand where some of the fans are coming from, where it's like, yeah, this is the sky is falling. I can look to a lot of things in the last handful of games and say, yep, good luck. I don't even know. Even with 3 of the best 15 players in the league, I just don't know if we're going to get out of the first round of the playoffs. And I refuse to do that. Not after everything that this season has looked like for us and how much of a track record this team overall, regardless of the 3 guys being together, has proven to us.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I was going to say I'm not freaking, although I do find some pieces of this game instructive. We're going to get to that because I think there are some takeaways we can say, hey, I think this is going to work. These things might be actually problematic for them against this specific team. Again, I don't think this is going to, you know, there's every good team at this point is going to pose specific challenges. The Bucks definitely pose specific challenges. I think we saw what some of those things are. Going to get to all that here in a second. Got to though. You mentioned Kevin Durant. Whatever you want to say about these last couple of games, Kevin Durant is not the problem. We're talking 42 points again, 42 points against Indy, 42 against Milwaukee on Sunday. Drops another 32, shooting over 50% from three during that time. Playing with joy, playing with happiness, all the things you want to see your superstar exude. That has been Kevin Durant's mode of operation over the last three games. And for that, he is the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. Joy creates success. No, almost no one more successful at basketball than Kevin Durant. Enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? Kevin Durant, the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week.
All right, so we get into this game script here, and it was sloppy early, I think, for both teams a little bit, and then it was sloppy late for the Nets, and then there's everything that occurs in between. I know we're going to get into these rotations and talk about them a bit, and I just think to set the table about it, I personally, and there are things to take away from this, but I know we're probably going to cover some Steve Nash choices as well. Go back to the prior game, where Mike James is on the court for 5 minutes. Bruce Brown gets five. Alize Johnson gets 3 minutes, right? And you look into kind of the rotation that they start with, et cetera. But then you follow it up with this one where James is out there for a huge stretch of minutes. And Claxton, who just came back from the protocols, he gets a little sample size but isn't on the floor a lot. I don't know where you're going to go with it, but my overarching thing to me was, yes, the Nets wanted to win these games. Also, I don't think the Nets were willing to, or Nash was willing to, risk trying to force the issue with the best version of the Harden-less lineups and overexposing some of what they may want to do in a playoff series potentially against this team.
Yeah, that's a big part of my takeaway here, at least early in the game, right? Like, things happened differently in the second half than happened in the first half, for sure. Like, they ran completely different, maybe not completely different rotations, but very different rotations first half to second half. Like, we get the DJ start again, where it's going to be, and I think that actually, I didn't hate it. I get why they're doing it. They're able to then stick KD on Brook Lopez for a little while, and that they kind of hide him there, so I don't think I worry too much about that. They played the exact same way against Giannis that they did last game, which is to say, you step out, basically sit and hold back as far as possible. If he was going to take threes, you can take as many threes as you want. That's the way it's going to operate. I think that every team is going to play him that way, and it's just going to be up to him to decide if he's going to take those. You know, he took a lot in this game, but he also gave himself. See, the one problem with guarding Giannis this way, and it seems like it makes so much sense to start, and they do this a lot with DJ, and they did it with Blake too, is that it can seem like you're baiting him into taking long threes, wide open threes, which you kind of are. The problem with this defensive scheme, which some people I think sometimes forget, but then it gets rammed home really quickly for you, is that you kind of also don't want to give Giannis a runway or like a head of steam toward the basket, and that's also kind of what ends up happening. So when you don't challenge him for threes, which they didn't do really any time he put up a long range shot in this game, the times where he didn't, it actually kind of did work against them because he's able to build up momentum to the basket, and the steps are so long that with momentum, and if he has an idea of what he wants to do, he can get them in real trouble. And so this is the part where, like, you can play this lineup with DJ and you can play these lineups with Blake, and you can, like, you know, say this is how we're going to handle it. But it's not like this one clear one-for-one kind of thing where, like, oh, we'll just give him open threes and hope he doesn't make it. Like, he does something else if he doesn't take the three, right? Like, yeah. and the other thing is nearly unguardable. Like Giannis with a full steam ahead approach to the basket with those long legs, the long arms, and the ability to, like, sort of Eurostep around full defenders. Like, basically take a step and a half from the free throw line when he's moving with speed. If you don't bring a double fast and make a wall, he's going to kill you. This is why he got 30 shots up, and it was 12 more from the line because he gets fouled a lot. So I'm going long-winded to say that I don't mind like the way they tried defensively to do it, and I agree with you that this cannot be the final version of how they guard him, because you're going to continue to get this thing, and it's not just going to be about him shooting open threes. And I don't, maybe that wasn't where you were taking this, but like in terms of throwing like the kitchen sink defensively, I think there was clearly they also weren't doing that in this game.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, it's funny because Bruce over, one of our guys on Twitter that we get into it a lot around the Nets, he was saying Giannis with these open three looks. And it was funny because on the season, Giannis knocks down 31% from beyond the arc. And at a point in this game, his now three game stretch against the Nets had him at 9 of 18. It drops a little bit because he ends up finishing 4 of 12. So, you know, he's probably going to come back down to his averages, especially over a 7-game series. So I think if you push him into that mindset of, to your point, go ahead and take the shots from the perimeter, but you have to delicately balance the idea of it can't just be DeAndre Jordan sagging back into the paint and saying, take that look, because now you are giving him that space to drive, and then whether it is going right at the rim or kicking outside to the perimeter shooters, it just creates a dysfunction for the defense where you're kind of just asking for trouble, essentially. And then he also had a nice game at the line as well, where he struggled this season so far. I've been tongue-in-cheek about my expectations around who should be getting minutes when it comes to the playoffs. And this is the pure fan. I saved myself from putting it out on Twitter at the time. You know, Claxton comes back from his stint. And I know you can shut me down as quickly as you want, Doug, and you're probably right, more right than I am. But here's the deal. The point that I'm making is whatever minutes you are willing to give DeAndre Jordan in the playoffs, you need to be willing to give those minutes to Nicholas Claxton. Because the result, you know, the defensive results are going to be better with Claxton, and the offensive results are going to be generally the same difference. Whatever Claxton lacks offensively gets a little bit, you know, lost in the shuffle there. Obviously, we've seen Harden when he combines with DJ for some of those alley-oop plays. Listen, there's value in DJ on the offensive end. But when you go and look at the per 36 on both of these players, you're talking about DJ giving you a total rebounds at 12. Go down and take a look at Claxton. He's giving you 10. So it's, you know, it's a marginal difference between what you get back on these guys. Defensive and offensive rebounds are nearly the same as well. But defensively, I don't even care if you run Claxton out just for him to pick up a quick set of fouls and you end up getting him back onto the bench. There is zero reason why one, and this is what this, I think this does speak to, not overexposing it. He just came back again from the protocol, so he has to ramp back up a little bit too. There's zero reason why Claxton, if you're going to play a five, and it's going to be DJ or Claxton, it should be Claxton. Because the potential is Claxton can do something unexpected. DeAndre Jordan is not going to do anything unexpected. That's not even a knock on him. He just is who he is. Those are the results you're going to get. When you get into these series, you might as well have that wrinkle that maybe the Bucks can't react to as well. Or maybe he is able to stay in front of Middleton for a handful of possessions when you get onto a switch situation. And I tell you what, you don't want DeAndre Jordan trying to handle Middleton on a switch. You don't even want him trying to handle Giannis for any stretch, really, either. Shy of being physical, which he does have, that's the only real value that I think DeAndre Jordan brings, in addition to having, obviously, experience, veteran presence. But that's just something that I think I'm willing to hang my hat on that a little bit, that if you find yourself in a series against a team like this and you need a different look, Claxton at least gives you an idea around that. Otherwise, go totally small, live with the results, and don't put DJ or Claxton out on the floor and go with the Jeff Green lineup at the five, or, you know, the pseudo five with KD out there. That's fine by me. But go one way or the other, because the wish-wash where you end up with DJ getting minutes, I'm not going to agree with it when it comes time to the playoffs.
I personally had the under on 19 minutes about when you would start freaking out that Claxton only played 5 minutes in this game. So I win because I got us at
eight. It's not about this game. It's not. It's not about this game. This is just about the big picture of getting into the playoffs and anticipating DJ playing 12 to 15 minutes in a playoff game. I would just as soon see Claxton for those minutes.
I don't think either of these things. I hear you. I don't think I can get all that excited about it one way or the other. I don't think these things are like sort of linchpin moments for the team. I really still haven't minded what DJ's done the last couple games, frankly. I'm no DJ apologist at all, but clearly, as anyone who's followed us for the last two iterations of this podcast would know, that we have not, there's no like, you know, we're not leading the Grand Marshal Parade of the DJ fan club down the streets for 100% sure, so no one needs to worry there. I just don't see that as, like, these 21 total minutes between the two of them, like, just not really that big of a deal. So I'm with you. I wouldn't mind seeing more of it. I think that there's been clearly, between the health protocols for Claxton and, like, we've talked about his, like, inability to sort of, like, recognize what's happening sometimes in the offensive end, I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze. And there's probably – I do think that we see – I think we probably do see more minutes of him over the course of the last couple of weeks. I really actually think this was like these last couple of games were like DJ starts only. I don't think, but this and then Philly, I don't think we'd see him starting anyway. So I think it's sort of moot because I think these are like the two situations, at least for the Eastern Conference playoffs, where you can make a functional reason about why he should be in the starting lineup. And there's no other team. Like, he's not going to play in the first round at all, I don't think. I don't think, you know, almost no matter who they play in the first round, I don't think that's going to be a DJ spot. So, oh, God.
Did you like, no, because there's other things about this game. Did you enjoy when there was James, Brown, Shamit, and Kyrie Irving on the floor together at one point?
Hold on a second.
Kind of a sweet vibe.
Yeah. So I'll get to that in 1 second, actually, because this is the lineup that I want to talk about and like where I got to throw a little of this at Nash's doorstep, because we're just going to jump ahead to the fourth quarter here in a second. First, have to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar. Look, you're into protein bars, you're looking into staying healthy, you've probably tried a protein bar in the past, you've taken one bite of these things and realized, oh my God, like what am I biting into? It's like cardboard, maybe a little sponge, no flavor at all, and then Built Bar came along and it just changes your life when it comes to protein bars. Absolutely delicious. The flavors are out of this world. You're going to think these flavors are ice cream flavors. They're not. It's actually a protein bar that's actually healthy. Coconut almond. Those are the ones the NBA DM group goes absolutely crazy for, the coconut ones. Cherry, raspberry, mint, brownie. These are just some of the flavors you're going to get at Built Bar. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar. These are the stats you want. We're stat heads over here, folks. These are the exact stats you want out of your protein bar, and only 4 grams of net carbs. Right now, you order today, you're going to get a raspberry, you're going to get mint brownie, get whatever you like. You know it's going to be healthy. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15. Lock, just like our podcast network, and 15 for the 15% off you're going to get on your first order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Also got to talk to you about our friends over at Bet Online. Look, you know these guys, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Basketball ramping up for the playoffs. We're not worried about the Nets. We're going to be betting on the Nets the whole playoffs, folks. And we also got baseball season in full swing as well. You can track all the action you could ever dream of over at Bet Online. Maybe it's hockey. Maybe it's UFC. They really got you all covered there at Bet Online. Before the next pitch, or the next tip-off, go over to BetOnline, sign up for a free account, but you're going to want to make a deposit. And when you do, make sure you use the promo code LOCKEDON for 50% on that welcome bonus. It's got to be your first deposit, and you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON as well. Don't sit on the sidelines. It's your chance to get into the game. Head on over to the website, BetOnline. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, so like you said, fast forward to the fourth quarter here. I mean, I want you to walk through the lineups and your frustration with them, or what should be laid at Steve Nash's feet. The one thing that you and I talked about, and if anyone didn't get a chance to hear it, we were on with Kane Pittman? That might not be right. Yeah, Pittman. Yeah, yeah, good. Of the Locked On Bucks podcast. For some reason, I had a moment. But it was a really good conversation just to get the other perspective of where the Bucks are and how they're feeling working their way through the season. So check that out. But we talked a little bit about the absence of Bruce Brown in that last game. He was coming back from a little injury. He does see 12 minutes in this one, but I think it basically played into what you talked about, right? It's been this weird kind of season where he's ended up in that pseudo five role. He still gives you a couple of those big plays, getting scrappy rebounds, but he also comes up short in a couple of those situations too, where I think it comes back to the median as far as what the value of a player like that is going to be as we get into playoffs against bigger teams like these.
Yeah, they just played these lines. So the fourth quarter told the whole story. The Nets were winning at the beginning of the fourth quarter, and basically the Bucks went on an 18-1 run. 18-1? Yeah, 18-1 run that basically sealed the game. So it ended at 115-104, but it started at like 103-97. Yeah, 103-97. And then the Bucks kind of just ran roughshod over it. And part of it was this lineup that, I mean, I just don't really get. It was a combination because Blake came in at one point during it too, but they ran one. They ran one iteration, which was Mike James, Kyrie, Bruce Brown, KD, and then Jeff Green. But there was another one that had – it didn't have KD with it, and it had Kyrie. It had basically, it was a combination of Bruce Brown and Mike James, which I just don't really understand at all. And then Blake kind of worked his way into it as well. And I'm sorry because I'm getting a little confused. I'm getting, like, turned around on two of these rotations. But basically, the idea was I just don't understand, one – why you would ever go super small against this Buck team. Of all the teams to not go really small against, like, why would this be the team that you would do it against? I don't get it at all. It's actually like the worst team you could ever do it against. Even when they have a guy like Bryn Forbes out there, and even when a guy like Dante DiVincenzo is out there, who are not the biggest guys in the world, although DiVincenzo plays a little bigger than he is. Like, I just don't understand a super three guard lineup against this team makes no sense to me. And where one of those guards is Bruce Brown, who is completely undersized for the role that he's going to be put in. And I get that he played like hustle ball, and I get that he had some big offensive rebounds and you like to see it. I kind of feel like that's going to be the exception and not the rule when he's playing in this role. Like, I just didn't get it. It just didn't make any sense. I understand trying new things, and I'm all for, you know, throwing stuff against the wall and see what sticks. This doesn't seem like you should ever have even thrown it to begin with. Like, this,
it's
this
not
lineup
sticky.
That they
There's
played.
No stickiness
oh,
to this
my
thing.
Oh, my God. I just don't understand. And they had no answers. They were getting completely brutalized. They could not stop anybody on defense, because this is the other problem with going super small, is that they're just going to – it's not just like one guy you can attack. There's three guys out on the court you can attack on offense. And then Bucks just scored at will. And that was basically the story of the beginning of the fourth quarter. They could not – and by the way, like, it's Giannis is out there. Dante DiVincenzo is out there. I'm trying to think who else was out there at the time. Middleton was out there. And already you're so far behind the eight ball with just that group compared to the group that they were running. Shamit was in there for a little bit too. It was just way too small, and they just got killed. And I just don't – this is the part where we've been really complimentary in Ash. Look, the team's been so good this year that you can't – go crazy on the coaching. I know that there's probably some X's and O's stuff that Nash doesn't do great at this point. Like, out of timeout stuff hasn't been awesome. Some of that's just to be like high learning curve stuff that he just doesn't have enough reps with. So you can't be punished. Like, at some point a coach comes in, they just haven't had a chance to do a lot of this stuff. I get it. Right. Like, a lot, some of that stuff is just reps and just knowing over the course of a career how to get this stuff. But these lineups that they played in the beginning of the fourth quarter that they just not only did they not change up, and then they didn't call a timeout during this time to just stop the bleeding a little bit. It was sort of inexcusable to me.
But this is the piece, though. But this, to me, is the piece where, again, and it is weird because there's the contradiction of you played your two stars a ton of minutes in this. It's not like you weren't trying to win the game. But it just seems like there's a threshold, though, where then the coaching staff, Nash, was just like, yeah, and we're not gonna put out our big lineup here to try to counteract you. And I, first year coach or not, you got Mike D'Antoni there with you. You got Jacques Vaughn. I mean, there's no way that when you put out that lineup in the fourth quarter that you're thinking, watch this. There's no way that Giannis is going to be able to handle Mike James and all these small bodies we have out there. There's no way that you're thinking they're going to be quicker and they're not going to be able to get to their spots and we'll be able to have better ball movement and quicker rotations and get around the perimeter, and then all of a sudden we'll have open looks. I don't see it. This is where I think the Nets were unwilling to expose anything that they may want to do in a playoff series. So at a certain point, you do just stop short and say, if this game was going differently, maybe you would have run out a lineup or a different look at the end of the game. But I think maybe the Nets get the sample size that they want over the first three quarters. And by the fourth quarter, it is kind of house money. Now, it's not insignificant. It can have implications on seeding. It can have implications on who you have to match up with. So that's the risk reward you do run. But ultimately, I keep coming back to, if the Nets team is 100% healthy, I don't think they fear anyone, whether they have home court advantage or not in a given series. And that's where I have to lean to that type of that line of thinking from Nash and the coaching staff, because otherwise I think you're spot on. It's inexcusable. There's no way you could be running that lineup out there in the fourth quarter and think you're not going to suffer an 18-1 run at the hands of the Bucks. So that's my takeaway on that piece of it. And the only other little footnote from this game that I think is worth noting, Billy Boy Reinhardt mentioned it over on Twitter. I think that Joe Harris is setting up for a really nice explosion in the playoffs, but he has had some struggles here against some of the better teams that we're going to see in the playoffs, where he's disappearing in some of these games. He's having a hard time getting his open looks. This one was a little bit up and down for him. I just think you're seeing frustration for him, and it's worth noting, because I think inside of this area of fan concern, Joe Harris is starting to get thrown into that. I don't have any concerns. I just think you're going to have to live with him kind of disappearing here until the games really matter.
I saw that tweet and I thought about responding because I just thought it was just sort of like hot take territory. I'm not trying to call in. I guess I am just calling somebody out here, whatever. But like I don't even totally hear it. I was trying to think about which games I thought that he, maybe the game before, I thought he was fine in this game. He didn't have to take a ton of shots, but I mean, KD's usage and Kyrie's usage rate is so high. It's not like he's not finding shots and they're just like relying on some other shooter here. I just don't. Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
You know what my bigger concern would be, by the way, because I agree with you.
He shot 50% right? from three in this game.
I was gonna say exactly. He still got his looks right. He still got his numbers, or the percentage is still there for him. What I would say in a series like this, my bigger concern would be, it's not on him, but just team overall, is when he gets into switches against either Holiday, or you saw stretches in the second half where he was picking up Middleton on switches. It's just, unfortunately, again, based on the size lineup for this team, those are going to be next to impossible assignments for Joe Harris. And that's just a defensive piece, though. It's not about the offensive end. And it's not even a concern. It's not Joe Harris' concern. It's team concern. How are you going to defend against some of those switches when you see them against a team like this? But you know, when Billy threw that up there, I think it was early on in this one. And like you say, ends up 4-10 and 4-8. So I really don't think there's a lot of concern there. I think that maybe just, I do wonder, and we'll get into locker room when we wrap this one up. I wonder if Nets fans look and say, if I don't see, 17 to 20 points from Joe Harris on a nightly basis in support of the Stars, I feel like we're not getting value, or Joe Harris isn't giving you his value. I lean away from it. I tend to almost wholeheartedly disagree with that sentiment, but I think maybe these are some of those things that now people are going to key in on. And now you're trying to pick things apart before we get to the playoffs after what has been a wildly successful season for the Nets. It feels like we're on the precipice. And everyone is ready to say, oh my God, but if Joe Harris isn't in prime form, we could have a problem. Oh man, if we have to face a larger team with bigger bodies, we're going to have a real problem. None of these things didn't exist from day one, so there's no reason to start worrying about them now.
Yeah, that's kind of where I land here, which is like the theme of the show. It's like, I'm not really worried. I don't subscribe to the idea that Joe Harris doesn't play big in big games. I think he was just fine in this game, and I don't think that you really worry about it too much. Like, KD and Kyrie shot 47 shots in this game. Both were really good. They lost a 6-point game because there was a run in the fourth quarter where they just couldn't stop the bleeding, and they probably should have called a timeout, and maybe they're able to just at least keep it close, and it gets a little closer near the end, and you get down to last shot territory. I think in the end, that's kind of what it comes down to me, and it just looks a little bit worse because it's two games in a row with this close team that you're going to likely, or not zero, probably decently high chance are going to see in the playoffs at this point. So I totally get why the worry is there. And I think we were pretty good about picking out what some of the problems here are. And again, it's hard for me to like put my finger on totally what, like, I'm not going to put it on a player-to-player issue here, because I actually don't think a player-to-player issue there was really much of a problem here. I think there was just a stretch in the game that got away from them. And like, that's kind of what it all... Yeah. I hate to just, like, boil it all down to that, but there was this one section of the game where they made some major tactical errors in terms of, like I said, no timeouts, and there's just the personnel that were on the court, and it cost them. And you would hope that when they get into the playoffs that thing would not happen. And that's the great hope, is that like you would see this coming, or the personnel would be slightly different, or just KD and Kyrie play through these minutes, and you don't end up losing the game. But in the end, sometimes you can just kind of go down to the end and say, hey, here's a 1 6-minute stretch that got away from them and cost them the game. And when two teams like this are really evenly matched, you really can't make a mistake like that for 6 minutes or whatever, you know, like, because and I don't think they'll be 100%. I don't think they'll be in a position like that in the playoffs either. So I think in the end, I think we're both not in Sky's falling territory. That was the theme of the podcast here. And I also wish they had probably taken one of these two, because it'd probably, I don't know, be a little more positive on the way out for the podcast. We're going to jump into locker room here, call some people forward. In the meantime, if you did not jump in the locker room, we could at least once a week. Maybe we'll do this twice a week. We got another game because I think we had changed the date at some point. So maybe we'll do it later in the week as well. You can help the podcast rate and review wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust helps us climb those podcast charts. Rate and review podcast wherever you listen.
And listen, you can get all the sports news that you need in under 20 minutes with the Locker Room Today podcast. It's host Peter Bukowski updating you on the latest news in every major sport with help of all of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast needs fulfilled. And in keeping with the theme of the show, guys, let's call forward our inner Lebowski. Yes. Everyone just calm down. You're being very undued right now. Walter Sobchak.